This is the one with Bluetooth earpieces.
And Mickey and Ricky.
And Rose the dog.
And everyone's got a bloody blimp.
It's called Rise of the Cybermen.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow.
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who Back When.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Who Back When.
A Doctor Who podcast.
Absolutely. Today's another new Who, N19, The Rise of the Cybermen.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty metallic.
Absolutely. Joined with me, as always, is the indelible Ponkin.
That's me.
And I'll be the other co-host, as is usual, Nick O'Leary.
Hello!
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad.
Good.
Yeah, it's...
I'm glad to hear it.
I fear that this N19 might be a slight departure from the heady heights of N18.
Oh, really?
I think so. I think that I'm still reeling from the fives.
Yeah. I don't think that we're going to require a take two on this one.
Perhaps not. There will be no Carl Jung references today.
No.
But anyway, shall we start in straight with the Beast Cap?
Yes, bite-sized chunk of Who It.
Bite-sized chunk of Who It.
Shazam, we have the return of an old foe, the Cybermen.
The TARDIS crashes through the vortex in our parallel dimension, where exhibits much-loved MTV show, it's actually called Pimp My Blimp.
In parallel London, Rose's dad is still alive, and the number one henchman of Diet Davros, Mr. Lumic.
Lumic, in a bid to cheat death, has invented the Cyberman, rebooting an origin story for a new generation of Whovians.
B-Scout over.
I think so.
You are welcome.
That's about as much material as we could get out of that one.
Before we jump into this podcast, let's point out one fact that is known to everyone in podcast land, presumably, and one piece of trivia. Number one, this is a two-parter, and we are actually only covering part one of this two-parter.
Yeah.
And what is the second one called? Is it Age of Steel?
Age of Steel.
We are... This may sound anticlimactic, but we're actually not going to reach... we're not going to reach the apex of this story in this review. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, this is possibly the first time that a story was conceived based on an audiobook. Big Finnish audiobook.
Fantastic. Is that one we've got around to already? Or is that
No, not yet. It's a fifth Doctor story called Spare Parts. And when we were watching this, because we read the IMDb trivia where we found this out before we press record, and we watched this episode immediately before pressing record, there's a line in there where Mickey Ricky actually says, "Oh, I'm just spare parts." Clearly an homage to the original. Wow. Pretty badass.
Absolutely. It turns out this entire universe is interconnected.
Yeah. Who knew?
How satisfying. Who knew?
Yes.
Who knew, knew who?
Do you want to start off?
I think so. So I think the first big talking point is the cold open, where we're introduced to Mr. Lumic, played by the rather splendid Roger Lloyd-Pack, who has been in everything British and a lot of things not British.
Yeah, you were trying to explain this to me before.
I really was.
Go for it.
Certainly for our, again, non-British listenership, his opus, his most famous role is going to be Trigger from Only Fools and Horses, which is one of the cornerstones of British comedy. It really is. It's, Fawlty Towers, The Office, you know.
Yeah, it's weird how big this is. Mm. I mean, you pointed at me with an index finger of pure judgment when I said that I had never seen Only Fools and Horses.
It's less so judgment. I just wonder how you traverse modern day Britain.
And it is actually true. I mean, it seems as though there is not a joke that is ever used, that is ever uttered from the lips of an English person that is not in some way a reference to this TV show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit like that, I think. And like I said, every time I look at him, I do just think Trigger.
So basically it's the equivalent of having John Cleese in this role.
Yes. John Cleese having ably acted in lots of things. It's very tricky to decouple him from either Monty Python or from
Fawlty Towers. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That film when he turns up with Connie Booth and they're both naked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what that's called. I mean, I only remember this because I saw it as a kid, and those two were, I think, either married or they were dating at the time, so they did this film together, short films, like half an hour long, and they're both naked. And I just remember being maybe 14 years old and going, holy shit, Connie Booth is naked.
Fair. But our other listeners may know Pack from Harry Potter.
Oh, yes.
As whatever is...
Alongside Tennant.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, again, another
he is Tennant's dad in Harry Potter.
Yeah. The Goblet of Fire, which is, I think is the best book and or film of that particular...
I don't remember which one's
which. That's a different podcast.
Yeah. Join us on Potter Back When.
Or Lotta Potter. Introduction of Lumic. So we're introduced to Lumic. And nominally this... I mean, there's no real build-up. You know how usually... certainly in Who, there's a build-up to the monster. And we're always hinted at in these frames and these sort of jelly frames and
in this case, it's all silhouettes and soft focus.
Yeah, but it's really not, is it? Like, you can put as much Vaseline on that screen, you know. You've called the bloody episode.
Watch me.
You know, the rise of this Omen. That you've, you know, you've...
We know what it's...
They've blown their load already.
Yeah.
So I guess we don't have to focus too much on, which one monster will it be?
Are Cybermen as important or as great a part of the public consciousness in this country? Were they in 2006?
Yes.
Do you remember when you watched this episode the first time already knowing what a Cyberman was?
Yes, 100%. They were one of the, in my mind, two big Doctor Who villains.
Okay.
I can very, very vividly picture their sort of 70s... Cyberman.
So everyone knew what they were. Everyone knew. Basically, they were just like
non-Doctor Who fans will have recognized a Cyberman. I feel pretty confident about that.
Okay, so in that case, the only reason they've put Vaseline on the lens is because they've now been revamped. They look infinitely more badass.
Yeah.
We don't want to show it off just yet.
Yeah, absolutely. There's less aluminium, like...
They're not wearing stockings, basically. Yeah. Stockings over their heads.
They've not just been collecting those blankets you get at the end of the London Marathon to stitch together. You know? Absolutely. So there's the we're introduced to Lumic, who
and his adjutant, or lab pot. No,
he's like researcher man.
I'm sorry. I feel like this dude is the actual guy who invented it. Like Lumic, he's an ideas man. Lumic is like, listen. I feel like the brain is really pretty important, and I feel like steel is pretty cool. So maybe you can be clever about it and combine the two.
He's the type of guy that I don't know if...
He gets people to do his homework for him.
He's the type of guy that you go to a meeting about like creating a new product or doing something, and we're like, it's like Facebook, but for... And then, like, that's
in hamsters.
Yeah. It's like Facebook for Hoovers. No?
It's called Suckbook.
Yeah, okay. He'll just basically just like, brains are good and metal's good.
Yeah, so let's combine them.
Yeah.
But I'm not a scientist. I'm just a dude in a wheelchair, which for some reason in this case makes me nefarious. However, the other guy's wearing a lab coat and therefore clearly is a scientist, right?
Clearly.
He clearly built the whole thing.
You can't just buy those.
And this is the first time where we get the introduction of, like, well, we need some sort of government ratification in order to mass produce this.
I like he says Geneva. And then
this is now a life form.
Yeah, some bio physics charter, something that does not exist.
Yeah, probably not. Can someone please tweet Geneva right now and find out?
Someone tweet Geneva, the whole fucking city. That's all they do all day.
That is what they do.
That and watches.
Great watches, though.
Great watches.
But yeah, so hang on. Let's focus on this cold open. It is utter garbage. It is actual pants.
Yeah, terribly.
The dude goes, I'm sorry, this is now a new life form. We need to get this ratified by Geneva. And the other dude just goes, well, that's probably not going to work out very well. Like, they're not going to okay it. Let's just not do that. The scientist goes, but we should do that. He's like, but maybe, how about we don't?
But why not? Why not? Someone have brought that up in the R&D phase.
Exactly. Exactly my point. You've completed the construction of this thing now. You have a complete Cyberman standing in front of you behind a layer of Vaseline.
Yeah.
At no point did anyone go, well, we put a hobo's brain in there, so maybe that's going to be frowned upon.
Who's in charge of getting hold of Geneva? Greg? Greg. Is that you, Greg?
No, Greg is on the hobo brain.
Oh, Greg's... Who's on... Was it Phyllis? Is Phyllis?
Wait, Phyllis hasn't worked here for 6 months. No. Oh, god damn it.
She was a temp.
We should never outsource these things.
God damn that agency. Yeah, they quite clearly didn't have a risk log. That's all I'm saying.
And as a consequence, because scientist dude, who clearly is the brains of the operation, no pun intended, because he is opposed to the idea of just mass producing sans approval from Geneva or the government or whatever, fucking Lumic just goes, kill him. And therefore, the Cyberman, who has been constructed with an actual murder, death, kill weapon in his hand.
Again.
For no reason whatsoever.
It's because it tested well in focus groups.
In what focus groups?
The focus groups that they had when they started, they're like, okay, we need Facebooks for Hoovers. I mean.
So we've got Suckbook and we've got Brains and Metal.
The demographic of women from 25 through 35 really want a death, kill, murder weapon in hand.
You know what? Let's not even care about fast forwarding. I've got another bone to pick with this entire goddamn plot, alright? So, Lumic has invented the Cyberman because, as we can tell by the fact that he is in a wheelchair, he is dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he wants to, essentially he wants to be immortal, right? He wants to live forever. He wants to live beyond the confines of his body.
Which transhumanism is actually, there's generally a branch of people out there trying to figure this out.
Yeah. I know. So, why did he put a hobo's brain in a killing machine? Because I don't feel like that solves his problem.
It seems like
if anything, maybe. And also, why is the whole thing is about him like wanting to mass produce these things and like, you know, taking over the country or the world? Why? He doesn't need to do that. He doesn't even need Geneva's approval. He just needs to build a prototype that works. Congratulations, you've done that in the cold open. And now get scientist dude whom you haven't killed to take your brain and plop it in there instead. Problem solved. Actually, you know what? You win. Congratulations. Let's all live in harmony.
She has this really shitty, or at least self-imposed by the writing staff, like, non-rationale. Like, it's, I want to create a new type of human, but it's quite clear not a new type of human because it's basically all it is there's this metal shell with murder, death, kill. Like, it's very, very
fun. He's built a killing machine.
No one could ever look at that, squint and go, yeah, it's kind of like a human. Like, it's not gonna, no one's ever gonna do that. Like, what are you doing? Do you see that and think, yeah, totally want a piece of that action. That's exactly what I envisage for my wheelchair back.
No, but he sort of wants that, doesn't he?
No, but all he, focusing on one piece of specification, which is to not have a body that perishes. Not the, yeah, but will it retain my love of Ben and Jerry's fish food? Like, it's not, he hasn't, like, sure, in any way encompassed that, which I feel like would not, it can't be part of his plan, right? Like,
okay, you're touching upon something that is completely valid. I'm just thinking, why is he doing this to myriad other people and not just himself? Because so far, he hasn't even considered doing this to himself. In fact, the second he proves that the prototype is working, he goes, well, let's go round up some hobos. Let's mass produce this shit.
Yeah.
Instead of just going, well, we've proven that it works. Now do this to me so I can live forever.
Yeah, I guess that there's that part of megalomania that always people take their things and project, you know, take their own issues and project. I guess.
All right, whatever. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a hard sell, to be honest. The rationale behind Daleks is really easy. They're just like indiscriminate killing monsters.
Yeah, and Nazis, basically.
Yeah, they're Nazis, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas actually the rationale with the Cybermen is that whole assimilation part is way harder to prove, like, as a thing. Borg made sense.
Here's an interesting point to make, by the way. I don't know this because I haven't seen the serial yet, but we are on the classic branch of Who Back When, only two serials away from the very first Cyberman.
Pedler.
Yeah, from Kit Pedler's first venture into cyber splooge. And I'm not sure if the origin story is the same.
Well, that's another,
like, are they man-made?
That's another interesting thing about this cold open is that, as we alluded to in the B-scale, that it's a rebooting, isn't it? It's an origin story anew for a new generation.
Yeah, but do we know that? Do you know that? I don't know if it's the same or, you know.
No, I don't know, but I certainly at the time in 2006 or whenever this came out, had forgotten what the fucking original origin story was. So I was very prepped for a new one. Like, I was fine to go in and this be the new origin story.
Sure.
Early 20s or you know, however old it was.
Okay, that's definitely going to be a point that we revisit in two serials time on the classic branch.
Okay, so I think we can move on.
Yeah, bullet point number two.
Boom. So we've got, again, Mickey Rickey, fresh from 18th century France, the Doc and Rose in the TARDIS, flying happily through space.
Happily, you say? I feel like Mickey is being emasculated with every little syllable the Doctor
uses. It's actually one of the more uncomfortable scenes in New Who for me. you know, actually, what has Mickey done for them all up to this point, other than being quite a loyal friend to Rose?
Okay, there was that incident with him cheating and stuff, but let's move
on. Is it cheating,
that.
Actually?
Well, he wanted to cheat on his other girlfriend with Rose.
Yeah, but Rose was out fucking gallivant. Like, I don't know. I think it's great.
No, he had a girlfriend. He was Trisha Delaney. He was somewhere plowing Trisha Delaney. Then all of a sudden, he gets a call from Rose, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go cheat on Trisha with Rose. He's a piece of shit.
No.
He's a piece of shit.
Oh, no. To these two people, specifically.
Okay, fine. Yes, he's been loyal.
And Interglade Travels, he's been helpful and been, well, he's trying to be in earnest and all sure. That sort of cool things. And then they're just like, they're shooting a shit, like, oh yeah, remember when that woman could breathe fire and they're giggling and stuff, and he's like pressing this button because someone else didn't. He is the opposite of what fucking companions have been doing, which are just like, hey, I'm a 1,000-year-old god, you know, time-traveling god, and know everything about everything, all these pieces of technology. So when I say you should do something, maybe you should just fucking do it. And Mickey Rick is like, yes, I take your point. I will just do that thing.
Oh, I disagree. Whereas I think that's a very interesting point, but
like,
I disagree.
Companions are just like, well, maybe you don't know best. Like, how arrogant can you be, you 30-year-old human?
I think that's a super interesting point, but I disagree in his case for the pressing of the button. I reckon him pressing a button for half an hour for no reason whatsoever is just indicative of him being so scared of his surroundings and so unaware of how stuff works that he takes everything literally. Like, he doesn't interact. He basically is socially incompetent within the context of this trio.
Well, no, because
he can't take a joke.
And that's why they're like basically the whole opening scene of the doc, Rose and Mickey, is at Mickey's expense.
Yeah.
Because basically, I think the elicited response is supposed to be your sympathy, because I think maybe on some level, maybe we all feel like that displaced part of a world that's going on that we don't fucking know about, and everyone seems to know the damn rule books to certain social situations, whatever. And it fucking sucks to be like on the periphery and marginalised and like emasculated as you were. So yeah, I think that's the whole thing. And I don't know, I certainly in that scene thought, fuck you, Doctor. So anyway, this is the framing of when Mickey becomes a man, as it were, you know, like he grows up.
Oh, this is definitely his origin story. Well, we're going to be treated to his origin story even further soon. I reckon he is definitely more interesting in this episode than he's been to date.
Yep.
But, okay, I'm looking forward to us getting to Ricky, because I thought I remembered liking him, but he's an utter tool bag. He's a complete nuthole, and I don't like him either. However, the only thing I wanted to say was basically, yes, we do get this, not antagonism, but we get a bit of a feel for how alienated he is in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And it's basically just to drive a wedge between the two groups so that his departure from the TARDIS isn't going to be that much easier.
Yeah. Oh, and the resolution of him being a worthwhile person, satisfying.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
So he
the underdog.
We find, it's not entirely clear, but the TARDIS basically stops working, and the Doctor, in a relatively nonchalant way, he certainly seems distressed, but he proclaims the death of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
His lifelong...
Here's this thing I've been travelling around the universe for 900 years.
That is alive and is my actual companion.
Yeah.
Is
now dead.
He's now dead.
And also we're stuck in nowhere land.
And really does actually treat it like a ship at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
we haven't got to the point. It's with Matt Smith, right? Where we get to the point.
It becomes more anthropomorphized. But actually, I think when we plow through a bit more through Classic Who, the TARDIS starts to develop a personality. Certainly had before, with Tennant as well. Like, there's personality in the TARDIS.
There is, but it's more like a, I don't know if personality is the right word, or maybe I just don't know it well enough. But I feel like it's just like, oh, this is the trusty ship. We've been traveling around together. Or I've been traveling in this ship for so long that I care about this ship greatly. It was only later. And the anthropomorphizing of the TARDIS, that actually only occurs in one episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of semantics. He talks about it as if I think that's actual anthropomorphizing of the only episode, one episode, but I think there's a lot more.
Wife of the Doctor or something.
Yeah, great episode.
Fantastic episode.
Anyway, back to the
point. Okay, fine, yeah. Written by Neil Gaiman, I think.
I think that it's still just too nonchalant. Like, for...
Okay, yes, I agree.
For, you know...
By the way, we are about 2 minutes into this episode.
Cool. moving on. So instead of them thinking that they crashed the void and the TARDIS is dead, they've actually landed in what looks like London, but it's obviously a parallel universe.
Yes.
And the big giveaway is Zeppelins in the air.
I feel like 9 out of 10 parallel universes have Zeppelins. Have you seen...
Actually, we're in the one universe without Zeppelins.
Yeah, but exactly.
Every other episode has Zeppelins.
Any other parallel universe traveler, interdimensional traveler, whenever they get here, is like, holy fuck, there are no Zeppelins. Yeah, this is the weirdest thing. Have you seen the TV show Fringe?
No.
They've got parallel universes. Mm. And Zeppelins are the way that they indicate this. It's always that. No Zeppelin? Zeppelin. No Zeppelin? Zeppelin. That's how you can tell which world you live in.
Fair enough. So anyway, we're in this parallel universe, parallel London, and we find out through a conveniently placed poster that Rose's dad is still alive.
Yeah, Pete Tyler.
Yeah.
And he's actually successful.
Yeah, very successful.
Selling some shitty health drink, Vitex or something like that.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the framing of how they get there.
Yeah. Cool. Not the most modern form of advertising, by the way. It's meant to be like, oh, this is super modern because it talks and it moves. But it's like a broken GIF as opposed to like a video screen.
But then
I feel like we had shortly after 2006.
Probably before, I guess. But I don't know. I think we're very much still in the realm of static advertising at that point.
Oh, well.
I think so. I mean, sure. The other thing we're privy to is Bluetooth.
Everyone's got a Bluetooth headset. Well, not Bluetooth headset. Everyone's wearing in-ear pods.
No, they do actually mention Bluetooth at some point because...
Oh, they do, yeah. They make a joke about it.
So in the parallel universe, no one has phones. They've all got these earbuds. Their like stuff is projected straight into their brain, presumably. Whereas Rose has an actual phone, non-3G. This is pre-3G, right? This is Bluetooth and WAP and shit.
WAP and GPRS.
And she gets the updates through her phone. So it's actually quite a clever writing device in which she can interpret what's happening in other people's brains in a weird way.
Why the fuck did they design a mobile version of this newsfeed?
Everyone on Earth has
this thing plugged into their brains, but for some reason they have a mobile feed.
I'm going to say it's a happy RSS accident that actually it's not. It wasn't configured to display on phones, but just accidentally does. The ghost in the
machine. Maybe when he performed a jailbreak on her pre-iPhone phone whenever it was, N002, maybe a little bit of like the TARDIS translation matrix got in there or something like that.
So it does CSS as well.
Yeah, yeah. As in basically it's translating stuff and making it visible and understandable for Rose.
I think we've overdone it.
Okay, whatever. Okay, suspending disbelief.
Okay, cool.
Whatever.
So
Pete's alive.
Pete's alive. And it's, you know, I think we're supposed to understand that Rose is now going to be consumed by a passion to want to find out about her dad.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of where the Doctor and Mickey Ricky... Actually, at this point, I'm going to have to stop calling him Mickey Ricky.
Yeah.
Mickey. God damn it. Mickey. So at this point, Doc and Mickey sort of leave her to that. Like, yeah. She sits down on the South Bank, I feel.
Yeah.
And starts scouring the interwebs for information about her dad and apparently herself, which is really weird.
That does take a few hours on
GPRS. Yeah. what is this?
Yeah.
Whilst Doc and Mickey go to the TARDIS.
Yeah, and try to have a bit of a poke around. And the Doctor's a bit more despondent at this point. Mickey's asking some what I assume are supposed to be asinine questions, but they seem fairly pertinent. And the Doctor notices a light somewhere deep in the floorboards.
Yeah. Explain what he does with this light, because it pisses me off.
He goes and locates the light. Doesn't really explain too much other than there is some power and the TARDIS is clinging on.
Yeah.
Removes said light, which seems counterproductive, because if it's a power thing, presumably you want it plugged in to all the stuff
Yeah.
And not to remove it.
Also, it's a light. It's not like a battery. He's like, oh, we need to charge this. So why? As far as I know, it's a bulb.
Maybe it is a battery of some sort.
Okay, maybe it's a power source.
Anyway.
Fine.
So, and he... he says we need to charge it. Mickey, with absolutely a very sensible suggestion, says, why don't we hook it up to the power grid?
Yeah.
This is the power source
makes
I'm aware of.
Makes perfect sense to me.
It needs power.
Perfect
Let's
sense.
Yeah. And he goes, no, don't be silly. You need something from our universe. Why? You didn't even know this universe existed like 20 seconds ago.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you possibly know that? Okay, whatever. Well, what have we got? Me? Well, what about me, motherfucker? I'm also from your universe. Anyway. Right?
No sure. More,
right? But he blows on it.
Yeah, he blows on it.
It gets a bit brighter. And then he ecstatically exclaims, I just gave it 10 years in my life.
Totally worth every second.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't, dude. It actually wasn't. Because you're still left with something that needs to be charged. And I'm assuming that he can't give all of his life to charge it. And that wouldn't be enough. I haven't seen the next episode or rewatched the next episode yet. But totally not worth it. 10 years is a fuck long time.
Like I said, I think that for a man that lives outside the realms, the confines of space.
Okay, all right. Check this out. The Doctor travels around with humans, right?
Right.
So he cares quite a lot about Rose, yeah. Right? How long did he travel around with Rose?
Well, this thing, space, time is difficult.
Sure.
Let's say 3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years. So he holds very dear to him an amount of time during which he could interact with the person he's definitely holds very dear to him for about a third of the amount of time that he just gave up.
But if time in that, in our own linear and finite sense of the thing, well, not maybe finite.
Well, he didn't, dude, you can't say that he was like traveling around for 90 years with Ross because she didn't age.
But maybe his concept of how he experiences time is relative.
He's like, oh, this is just, I just gave this light bulb 10 years of my life.
If you think about it, over 900 years, you probably take about 10 years shitting.
Yeah, very possibly.
So maybe it's just like...
Yeah, but do you not care about those moments of your life? Like, I mean, do you not contemplate on the loop? No, let's not get into that. But okay, when he says, I just gave up 10 years of my life. That is, I just gave up the equivalent of 3 of my relationships with Rose.
I would say, A, the quality of said time rather than the quantity. So there's no way. But the second thing is that setup would be so much more poignant if he'd have been more despondent earlier on.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Because it would make more sense. It's like, yeah, I love this thing so dearly.
I would give everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the equivalent of cutting off a toe.
Whatever. Yeah,
it is actually that. This out. Would you cut off a toe for just anything?
Like,
no. No, you wouldn't. You total liar.
Would I if my car broke down? Yeah, maybe. Anyhow.
All right. Fine.
So, okay, so we're going to leave that. The TARDIS is on the mend, sort of, I guess. And everyone's fucking about in the parallel universes.
And now we get the splitting up.
I think we go for rounding up bums.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So
I love rounding up bums.
Rounding up bums.
Oh, this sounds great.
Well, actually, it's again a slightly Whovian trope that... The first to be experimented on or to be to
always a homeless person
is a homeless person. Back to War Machines.
Oh yeah,
right
there you go. It wasn't a deliberate experiment, but yeah, the first person to die,
yeah, at the hand of a war machine was a bomb. And I feel like,
wait, no, that's not true.
What?
The first person to die in War Machines was one of the lamp technicians, one of the hypnotized Wotanified dudes.
I still think it's an active trope.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like, oh, no one's gonna miss them.
Anyone that gets experimented on or latterly in New Who, there'll be more examples of this, but I won't ruin it for
see I wonder now. If the next episode Edge of Steel is going to cover the following day in the parallel universe when like every front page of every newspaper was like a huge picture of all of the hobos. Like, all of these hobos died
near Soho. 3 a.m.
Covent Garden.
Amber Salady.
Yeah, listen to our War Machines review.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of Bloomick's henchmen, a sinister looking guy who's of Sherlock fame and probably a lot of other TV.
Yeah, you said this was the dude who played the taxi driver in the pilot.
So, yeah. Yes, he's a remorseless henchman that is rounding up bums with the promise of a hot meal and a jacuzzi or some shit.
Yeah, and someone else who's surprisingly clean, we found.
Yeah.
And well coiffed.
Yeah.
Is among the homeless chaps. They're on a rubbish tip.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
Which is, I mean...
Why are they there?
I'm not sure. I mean...
Because this one, BBC thinks of homeless people as, God, they probably just live on rubbish tips.
No, man. Like, they don't. Why would they do that?
Yeah, that's like the last place they would live.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. There's one guy who, instead of helping them, is just like... filming them and jacking it.
Yeah.
And then whatever, blah blah blah.
Yeah, that happens. They round up bums quite clearly for in fact almost immediate experimentation, because they get into the back of the van and there's screams already.
Get in the back of the van. Immediately start immediately start like probably drilling holes in their crania.
Yeah.
Got a question for you, dude.
Right.
When this scene came up, I was assuming, all right, so in the back of this van, they are chopping off limbs and whatever, replacing them with robot bodies. Like, basically, the thing that we see later on in possibly Matt Smith, or maybe Late Tenant, where this thing comes down, the helmet comes down and basically chops off the head, and the head is still inside the helmet, but the rest is all robot. But I was thinking, okay, something is going down in there that is actually cutting them to bits, but later on we get to see them, and they're just wearing the Bluetooth headsets, right?
Yeah.
Does that mean that every person on Earth who's wearing these Bluetooth things has been drilled?
Oh, I don't know. Should we say that there's more of an insidious one where these go straight into the drilling? Because everyone else is clipping, ready for drilling. These just go clip drill.
Oh, maybe that is. Yeah. All right, yeah,
I guess. Like, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't just say, here are some free earbuds. You guys are homeless and these things cost a lot of money. Put them on.
Also a very good point.
But whatever. Anyways.
Okay.
Round our bums, and Lumink has his presidential meeting. So earlier in the cold open, he flouts the idea that they'd need to register any sort of notification with this Geneva Convention thing that exists now.
Yeah.
But still wants to get the approval of the President of Great Britain.
Yeah, because, okay, A, there's a president now, yeah, as opposed to a prime minister, and B... Wait, what now? He just murdered a dude for suggesting the same. Why is he meeting with the president? He even tells the president, like, but why are you rejecting this offer? I mean, I've even prepared a paper on it. Mm. Fuck you, Lumig. You prepared a paper on it?
Why did you write this paper? Why did you write the paper?
Well, he clearly didn't write the paper. It was clearly the scientist whom he killed.
He didn't. Maybe hilariously, he had like an ethical dilemma after killing him. I thought, maybe I need to write an ethics paper on this. So he writes an ethical paper, apparently.
President goes, I don't give a damn.
This is weird and ridiculous. Let's not do this. You're mental ed. But I'm still going to continue to wear your earbuds because you're obviously mentally unstable.
Yeah. I don't trust you. I wouldn't trust you at all.
But here's access to my brain.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Also, Lumik, I can tell that you are the only person I've met so far in my life who doesn't wear earbuds.
Also a good point.
Yeah. It's not suspicious at all. I mean, he doesn't even try. He doesn't even wear fake earbuds. He's openly sinister.
You do all this thing that I won't do.
Anyway,
the president rebuffs his idea of essentially an uber race of mechanical men.
Yeah.
And there we are. So
and progresses to go to the one thing that we failed to mention before. Jackie Tyler, it's her birthday.
Yep.
It's her 40th birthday. She claims it's the 39th.
Yes, there is a cutscene somewhere that we've probably overlooked in which...
She's a total B-word.
She's a terrible...
She's super high maintenance.
Again, the other sort of theme here is that the grass isn't always greener in the parallel universe.
Yeah.
Like, your dad might be alive, but everyone's a prick.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, you know...
And that actually turns out to be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. They really stick to those guns. You know, she's basically a twat.
Yeah.
The entire time.
But I got asked, though, why is the president invited to her birthday party? Why does the president even care? Why is he going to her birthday party?
Well, let's say that that Pete Tyler really is like one of the foremost... You know, maybe it's a sponsorship.
He's number one.
Yeah, maybe it's like a, you know, he's a big donator to the party or something, you know, big benefactor.
Okay.
That sort of thing. So, you know, that happens all
the time. There's no, like, Secret Service or anything.
No.
There's a president. He turns up
at president of Great Britain.
Jackie Tyler's fake 39th birthday party.
Yeah, I guess. What I think that's weirder is that they all, like, the president and Lumik have that, and Pete Tyler have this quite heated exchange over, actually, you're going to die, and I'm sorry, but that's the way it's going to be. I see you're 8 for a drink.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yeah, that's very weird.
You know, isn't that weird? It's like, should we all just meet up later and do the conga?
Yeah. No, I agree. That is massively weird.
I've just condemned you to your own, like, terrible, terrible, slow and quite painful death. Oh, you found a way to, you know, prolong your life? No. You're going to die. You're going to die in that chair. I'll see you later for a snowball. Like...
you know? Actually, he won't even see Lumig because Lumig isn't even invited.
Is he not invited?
He's well, not Lumig.
They're literally talking about a party in front of him. What yeah. dicks?
Yeah,
I can see
the
why
number
I've been
one
driving.
Hasn't even. Yeah, the number one hasn't even invited his boss.
I can start. I'm
what
starting
a piece of
to,
shit.
I'm starting to understand.
Pete, you're never
going to
be
behind the Cybermen. Yeah.
You're never going to take over the company, Pete, if you don't invite the boss around for your wife's fake birthday.
Yeah.
Anyway, immediately upon exiting this blimp, and by the way, they were in a blimp, right? Presumably in the air, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Or had they just parked?
Or some shit.
Maybe they just parked, because I'm thinking this is kind of weird because the president just left.
Yeah.
But they were in the air. But immediately thereupon, Lumig accesses Jackie Tyler's brain in order to get schematics and security codes for the house where the party is going to be, because he knows the president's going to be there. Spoiler alert, he's not going to use those schematics or codes at all.
No.
He's going to allow an army of robo dudes to descend upon this house and break everything.
Maybe he looked at it and thought, should we just go shock and awe?
Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. This all sounds like a bit of... Well, I mean, he just really meant to do it, but he also had to do the washing up as well. And the washing up took longer than he expected. So he just... Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, it's a tough gig. Okay, here's another slight plot hole.
Okay.
Is that we saw bums earlier.
Hey!
We saw bums. getting terribly, terribly painful implants.
Someone was drilling those bums.
Someone was drilling those bums.
Is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Whereas Jackie's brain got taken a hold of with very little fuss.
Yeah, what I was suggesting before was when she had that thing installed.
Does everyone just go through some horrible painful process?
Yeah, exactly.
Not unlike getting an iPhone contract. So.
Nice one.
Zinger. Take that, the replacement of Steve Jobs, whoever you are. Moving on. So it's racist.
Right.
So we're prepped for the idea that this party might not go to plan. So in between times, Mickey starts to develop a backstory.
Yeah. So they've now split up completely.
Yes. And Mickey, with a slight tantrum, but a slightly manly tantrum, to say, you know, Rose goes one way to find her dad, he goes the other way, and Doctor's like, no, you stay here. It's like, no, you quite clearly only care about Rose.
Obviously.
Fuck you. I'll go do what I like, which is the first point where Mickey starts to basically grow a backbone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He is definitely getting more interesting. Still don't like him. Still don't like him.
Still.
I'm not talking about you, Noel Clark, okay? You're a jolly good fellow. I'm talking about your character on this show, or characters, in fact, because, spoiler alert, I hate both of them.
Yeah. So Mickey goes to find his grandma.
Yeah.
His elderly grandma who's blind, which makes the meeting even more delicious, because, you know, he has to say, oh, I'm Mickey. Or, don't be stupid. You're Ricky. Okay, I'm Ricky. I just had that temporary bout of forgetting my name. Let's not all question that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you quite rightly pointed out while we were watching this, this is the black person trope.
It is the black person. Oh, yeah, his dad left, and then he was raised by his grandma. It's like...
But she's a real firecracker.
Yeah, some shit like, God damn, that's some lazy BBC writing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But although black president, so... Again...
That's also lazy writing.
That is lazy writing.
That's like, it's the go-to, we are in the future and more progressive than we are now.
Yeah. We'll install one minority in a position of power and then we don't have to justify fucking anything else.
Anything. And if anyone ever says, yeah, but you wrote a line there in Act 2 that was kind of racist, we're just going to point at the black president.
Yeah. Okay, fair.
Okay.
No, null and void.
So all right. Anyway, I might cut that bit.
Mickey. No. That's an important point. I want that in.
Okay. That's what she said. Yeah.
Mickey is then abducted by, another great Whovian trope, the final human resistance against an unending Reich of Darkness.
Yeah, except this is the most, the flimsiest bunch of dilettantes we have had in a position of resistance so far.
I like to think them as a very small, concerted group of partisans.
A small and concerted group of partisans.
A small, concerted, and very, very, very determined group of partisans. There's three of them.
No, there are three of them. We get to see a little bit of action later on, and it turns out they're not very good at it.
There's three
and
of
they're
them.
Led by a complete psycho madman.
There's three of them. They share two Kalashnikovs.
Between them.
Between them. They've got four banana clips, two Kalashnikovs.
Eddie, it's my turn to hold the Kalashnikov.
Yeah, I guess
it's awful.
Yeah.
Anyway, they abduct him, blah, 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 blah. We learn that
they mistake him for their fearless leader, Ricky, who is, we're told, is London's most wanted.
Yeah.
At this point, Mickey is starting to go with the flow of adventure, and he's just saying, yeah, I'm this guy, whatever.
Why is he London's most wanted, by the way? Sorry to interrupt
you. Presuming is that we're supposed to infer from that their little, a band of partisans have been going around.
You give them far too much credit.
They're some breed of, Northern Italian partisans and the French Resistance, all in one. He's their Charles de Gaulle.
Wait. He is Charles de Gaulle.
Yes.
The fuck are you talking about?
He's Mickey de Gaulle.
This makes no sense.
Anyway.
This makes no sense. Okay,
fine. What I'm saying is that I think we're supposed to infer that they've been going around causing havoc, some sort of terrorist, like a kind of freedom fighter style, just from the fact that they're on the most wanted list.
I feel like there's...
In their big blue LDV van.
Okay, I'll save it.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Okay, so at that point, Mickey gets taken to the, La Résistance.
Yeah.
Headquarters, where they're greeted by Ricky, his infinitely angrier doppelganger.
Oh, I'm sorry, but all the little facial spasms that Ricky exhibits in order to demonstrate how angry he is, they are not believable on any level. No, they are not.
No.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you know what? This is how much I care about you guys. Go to whobackwhen.com/whatever this episode is, N019-whatever, and have a look at the images there, because I'm going to pop in a few screenshots of his weird facial twitches.
Now, I would say that basically...
In fact, let's gif it.
This era of Doctor is full of pantomime-esque, when the Doctor goes...
No, it's not.
I was given my... I was given 10 years of my life worth every second. It's just like...
But that's just Tennant being weird and wobbly.
But then, wobbly Mickey is... exists when he's like, oh, I don't know what I am, just a simple earth man, I'm just pressing button. And I think that it's very in keeping that it's basically overacting all to balance out. I think that if he was just quietly smouldering and said, really,
no, there are people who actually act well on this show.
No.
Everyone isn't an over the top crap pantomime actor. He is, however, in the role of Ricky,
at this
completely
point,
unbelievable.
At this point, are we now talking to Noel Clarke and about his performance?
Okay. No, we are not.
Okay, so I'm gonna take the mantle of talking to Noel Clarke. I think he did a stand up job. I can understand why it'd be quite tricky to go from blasé, scared of life Mickey to Charles.
I'm sorry, Paul. Quite tricky.
Yes, quite tricky.
It's acting. He's an actor. You can't say, it's quite tricky. I think it must be quite tricky to maneuver a bus through traffic.
I'm going to say this again because I feel like you talked over it. It's tricky to go from Mickey to Ricky.
I think that's bullshit. And I completely disagree with you. Noel Clarke, I'm sure, can be a great actor in other stuff, but in this, I'm sorry, this was not good.
No, I liked Ricky. Ricky was intense. And actually, he kind of took me to that place where he's like, to develop those facial tics, you must have seen some things, man. Do you know what I do actually like about this Human Resistance? Is usually they're sort of made from bits of sellotape or whatever.
They're always wearing tires.
And even though there was only sort of three of them, they had guns. They had the foresight to go, do you know what would be good as part of the Human Resistance, against this terrible, terrible, terrible
insidious new order that's forming? Guns.
Yeah.
No, they didn't just do it through like, oh, we're all techies, so we're going to hack it. No, I'm just going to shoot some motherfuckers.
No. Oh, you know what? Fuck it. You're entitled to your own opinion. That's fine. That's okay. I think you're wrong.
Ricky's good.
But Ricky is awful, and this resistance wouldn't last a second.
Okay. So.
They're so crap.
One terrible thing about it is that.
What is the resistance, perhaps?
Is they basically induct Mickey. With very little in terms of evidence as to what his motives are. They're just like,
well, okay. We do get that scene where they're like weirdly scanning his groin for no reason. Like he's just there wearing his boxers going like, well,
looking amazing.
Yeah, he's in great shape. Yeah, fine. But it's, we just get this gratuitous shot of Mickey Ricky in his boxers getting his groin scanned for no reason whatsoever. I mean, the dude who was previously on the rubbish tip.
They're just like, bleep, bleep, okay, all of your sperm has been irradiated. So whatever. The point is that at some point they get word that Lumic is on the move with his new band of, mechanical bums. They're descending upon the party. So they set out in their LDV band with their brand new freedom fighter, Mickey, in tow, to intervene in some way.
I mean, we don't even really know.
They don't know that they're cybermen.
They're carrying guns, so very possibly it's an assassination attempt. We have no idea. But whatever, so they set off on the road. In the meantime, we failed to mention, we've now got Rose and the Doc. They are impersonating waiters at the fake birthday party.
Yeah.
And we now get scenes where Rose talks to both her dad and her mum. For no reason whatsoever. She is the help.
Oh, well, it's like curiosity. Isn't
it? Well, I get why she wants to talk to them, but I don't get why they talk to her.
I think we're supposed to infer that, certainly from her dad's point of view, is that there's some, even through parallel universes.
Yes, I got that. There's something there. It's like, oh, have we met before? Maybe we haven't. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Sure. No, I get it. But it's pretty ridiculous.
However, well, see, it's the opposite way around, isn't it? Like, her dad was very compassionate and empathetic and chatted to and felt that.
How do you mean opposite? Their way around?
Jackie was cold and terrible to her, whereas Jackie in her universe was the one that stuck around.
Well, yeah, but the one time that she met her dad was, as in when she was an adult or a young adult, he was very compassionate. He was very understanding and a great communicator.
Yeah, so maybe not the opposite way.
In fact, he understood her much. You know what? No, it's echoing the exact sentiment that Pete Tyler and Jackie Tyler exhibited during Father's Day.
You're right.
Because Jackie Tyler was also completely devoid of all understanding in that episode.
Yeah, Jackie's a dick, isn't she?
She's a total dick.
Yeah. Anyway, so in that party, she goes to talk to both of them. Pete's very nice to her. Jackie's a twat.
Yeah.
It's basically the long and short of it.
Blah, blah, blah. One thing leads to another. Cybermen attack.
Using all their nuance and all their strategy.
They're going in through the back door, right? They're using the key codes.
Oh, absolutely. And they're
opening doors.
They've spent months connecting tunnels like the Viet Cong.
Yeah. Charles Bronson. And
absolutely,
Donald's.
They've planned this all out, and they're going to hit his strategic points. And
actually, Charles Bronson was Second World War.
Yeah,
Great Escape.
Cybermen descend upon the party, and everyone is taken. The president, in an impassioned speech, says, "What are you going to do about it? Like, we're going to delete you." Which, is code for killing. So that Cyberman murders the president and then indiscriminately just starts to murder other people.
But it murders everyone, including the... Okay, I wonder if maybe we should have a soundbite here, because I can't really remember exactly what it was he said.
Upgrading is compulsory.
And if I refuse?
Don't.
What if I refuse?
I'm telling you, don't.
What happens if I refuse?
Then you are not compatible.
What happens then?
You will be deleted.
By the way, it's like you're not refusing. You were asking, what if I were to refuse? Not like I refuse.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm going to say that maybe the software update hasn't happened and they haven't figured out rhetoric.
Yeah, but they kill everyone. They kill everyone in the entire party.
That's the part that really winds me up. Because surely everyone at that party is good fodder for assimilation.
Yeah. But they don't.
Anyway. But anyway, so the Doc and Rose and Pete escape.
Yeah.
And Jackie does down a basement, but separate from the other gang.
Yeah.
And they're running around the fields and...
Boom, boom. Yeah, yeah. They bump into Ricky.
Yeah, yeah. Ricky and such turn up with some clashy calls, try shooting inside men. Doesn't work. Doesn't do a thing.
Yeah.
And Rose jumps on Ricky, and Ricky... Actually, this is a great... I mean, you got to like, do what it is.
Yeah, that's
Ricky
pretty cool.
Ricky just sort of shrugs off like, who the fuck are you? Which is very satisfying, because earlier, like...
He was a total lapdog, and now he's...
Now he's just the man. He's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm the man. And I know it's Ricky and not Mickey, but it's still very satisfying.
Conceptually, I'm totally on board with this. Absolutely digging the cold shoulder he's showing Rose. Execution? Nah, the Russian judge gives it a 1.2.
Oh,
like, it's it really is not that good.
No,
I'm sorry, man.
You're being... Not in that scene. Not in those first... let's have that soundbite.
Okay, fine. Soundbite, and while you listen to this, imagine someone pulling a Joker face. Soundbite.
Oh my god, look here. What? See you again.
Yeah, no offense, we are, but who the hell are you?
Great. Anyway.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Right. Tweet me. So the Cybermen surround the new troop. You know, the Doc's like, we surrender. You can assimilate us. We're good for that. And they're like, no, you deserve maximum deletion.
How deleted are you when you've been maximum deleted?
It's an 11. It's kind of like Spinal Tap.
We're going to turn up the deletion to 11.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were also going to empty the trash.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a level of deletion that you will never be able to control Z.
Oh my god. That's some heavy stuff.
That's some heavy stuff. I mean, to be honest, that brings us... That's
the end of the episode.
That's the cliffhanger end. Where will this whole this whole Doctor Who series go?
Yeah, tune in next week.
I guess, yeah.
That's done.
Yeah.
Done.
I know that wasn't the most scintillating thing, but that was a really shitty episode.
Done. do you remember Age of Steel very well? I don't.
Not especially. Other than, the only thing that does stick out in my mind is Mickey Ricky. We'll leave him to the next episode.
Yeah. Before we rewatched it tonight, as in, I'm rewatching it for the first time since 2006. Before that point, I have, even on this podcast, said, this is the moment where I'm going to change my mind about Mickey Ricky. This is the moment where he suddenly turns into a good character. Maybe in Age of Steel.
Maybe.
I'm not going to give up hope here.
No, you don't.
No,
you
I will not give up hope. Anyway. That guy's going to be my favourite character.
So do that...
My fave.
Bring us on squarely to this first partial. This one of two.
I'm not going to think that he's a douchebag.
You stop. Noel Gallagher's going to cry.
I don't dislike Noel Gallagher. God damn it. I don't dislike Noel Gallagher. I think he's a spiffing fellow.
Okay.
His character is shit. I'm sorry. Mickey and Ricky are total pants.
I disagree.
Reviews. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit disappointed having rewatched it now, because as I just said, I remember this being an incredibly good episode. Or an incredibly good two-parter, rather. It has some qualities to it. Numero uno, we get the introduction of Cybermen in New Who. Fantastic villain, but I can't help but feel that they have changed the origin story. And as I said before, we're going to know this for shizzle in two episodes of the classic branch.
Mm.
Yeah. But as far as I can tell, or as far as I'm aware, they have changed the origin story, and I don't feel like they've done it much good. Like, I would have much rather... Fuck it, I'm going to interrupt myself. Do you not think that the Cybermen originally were some space cyber race?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, they're not like human beings who have been augmented. They may also do that, but they are certainly a space race.
I think that, if that isn't the case, and again, we'll find out more in Classic Who, that they're, you know, the writers here are trying to take advantage of the Borg trope of Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that sort of...
The assimilation. But we definitely get a lot more of that later on, in even newer New Who episodes.
Bioethics being, you know, quite a big thing in the early 21st century. That's basically the battlefield that they're trying to play on.
Here's what I feel. I feel like you were probably completely right when you said Cybermen were part of the public consciousness. People knew all about them. Like, they knew what Cybermen were.
Mm.
And I think the problem is the BBC relied too heavily on that fact. Instead of really building some kind of character into this race,
yeah,
they they just went, well, we're going to conceal them behind soft focus for half an hour, and then at the end we're going to focus in and we're going to see the Cybermen, and that's going to be it. That's going to be completely enough, but it's not enough.
I would say that actually that is the point I was getting at was it is an iconic, the design of a Cybermen, just the aesthetics.
Yeah.
And that's what was burned into my memory. The actual story around the Cybermen, I just remember thinking, oh, there's a scary Cybermen, and look at that, the face with the slightly squared, all of that is.
They could have done more with it, and they didn't. Yeah. So in that sense, it was a little bit of a disappointment. I don't feel like we've got to know the bad guy properly. I'm not entirely sure what his agenda is, even after 40 minutes of this episode. I still don't really know what he's about. Like, what does he want to do? Why does he not want to turn himself into a robot and live forever? That makes no sense. The resistance, I like the idea of a resistance. I said this in every episode of Who Back When so far, when we've dealt with something post-apocalyptic and we have a resistance. I like that. I think that as a narrative concept works super well, and it's very exciting and interesting. In this case, the execution was a little bit budgety and blah, but who cares? I'm fine with that. Further interesting points. Pete Tyler, we got to know him in Father's Day, we get to know him a little bit better now, and even though he has a new job, he's the same character and very likable, and I as an audience member care about him as a character. Jackie Tyler, total B-word in this episode. When it comes to the parallel character of Mickey, or Mickey's Ricky, however, I am utterly disappointed. Completely disappointed. Fuck it. I've lost all oomph.
Go on, go, man. What's the number? 0 to 5.
I want to say something about Mickey Ricky, and I can't really put my dick on it. I think Noel Clarke's performance as Ricky is just as extreme in the other direction as his performance as Mickey. And in neither case do I find it believable. I think it would have been better if he had just toned it down a little bit. He just needs to be disillusioned. He doesn't need to look so angry that his face is going to crack. It's too much. I'm going to suspend the rest of my judgment until the next episode. I'm giving this a goddamn blimps. I'm giving this a 2.1.
Okay.
No, wait, I take it back. I'm giving this a 1.7.
1.7?
1.7.
Okay, so my review. I'm going to hit a couple of the same points as Punkin. First off, I'm going to go for this human resistance. As part of the trope is a wonderful device, because it's always nice to know that if there was ever a terrible, terrible dystopian fucking future, that there would be a band of us, and you'd like to project yourself into that resistance. You'd be able to, you'd be part fighting for freedom. The problem is that I don't understand what this human resistance was formed for and is fighting against. They think something sinister is happening with Looming, but up till now, we're not told that he's committed any crimes.
Well, we don't know anyone's motive. We don't know his motives. We don't know their motives.
No, but specifically,
we don't know any.
If we were going to form a resistance fight,
No, that's not true. We know that he's committed crimes.
What's he committed?
Even the grandmother said, there are stories of people disappearing off the street. I thought you were taken, like all the others. Most likely, they know that it is Looming.
Are we thinking it's the bums thing? I don't know. I think it's just relatively flimsy as an idea that, I don't know. I mean, the other resistances in Who that we'll encounter a bit more and ones before it have seen travesties and then elected not to be part of it.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas these are kind of, they're going off of feelings. I don't know. I'm not horrendously into it. The fact that they then see Cybermen or good thing we got these Kalashnikovs. So why the fuck do you have these Kalashnikovs if you have no actual data? No actual evidence to prove that. Yeah, you guys are just hoarding guns? That's some super dangerous shit. Anyhow. Okay, so the resistance, I'm not totally on board with the premise. Mickey Ricky, I like the story of him becoming a more fully rounded character. And actually, I do love the idea that as great as Rose and the Doctor's relationship is and how swashbuckling they are through time and space, that you can reject them as an idea because they're slightly elitist in their little club of relationship. You know,
it's them. What? As in, the Doctor and
the Doctor and Rose. They're kind of like with Ricky and Mickey specifically, but you know, with people in general, it's like, oh, we're, you know, super smart, cute, cuddly, you know, and all you people are.
Well, they're practically in a relationship.
But this is it, and that's sort of part of it that becomes that. I don't know, some stages during the tenant tenancy. Hello. The tenant tenancy. I find that like we're traveling as a couple, slightly cloying and not inclusive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the Doctor should have thought of that before he invited Mickey along.
Well, this is it. I just think that I actually think it's more of a writing issue there, that they've kind of created this couple. And they're writing their way out of by making Mickey a proper human.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you here, but why did that happen? In the very beginning, when they went to New Earth, they were talking about Tennant and Rose going on a date.
Yeah.
And like, do you remember our first date?
Basically, I think they just took it too, or they're taking it too far. It's a correction in the writing where they've gone, okay, we've kind of made this weird traveling couple now instead of a traveling doctor and companion.
And companion. The best way to fix that is to invite her ex along and make it super awkward because they clearly want a bone.
I guess so. And that tension. But then the second part of that correction is to, instead of making it about how he's the third wheel, to make it about how he's an independent man of his own volition.
And stronger on his own.
Strong on his own. He actually doesn't need the validation of Doctor and Rose to be important.
Yeah, or possibly how they don't recognise his potential.
Absolutely, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. But it's still not very fully formed. That idea completely trumps the narrative. It's not in tandem at all. The narrative is just a capsule for his idea. And it just, I don't know, they basically used up a really big foe, a really minor... like character development.
Well, again, let's wait until the next episode.
We certainly will, but I just don't think that the Cybermen, the reintroduction of the Cybermen, got the payoff it might, or at least, you know, you might hope it'd want to for what, again, what I would class as the second biggest, baddest foe. I don't know, the payoff's not great. The origin story isn't well formed. Lumic, we've already discussed. Doesn't make an awful lot of fucking sense. And that the Tyler's dynamic, Blair, you know. Oh, Rose has feelings. Okay, great. I don't know. It just... There's just
I thought there was even more there that was about the Tyler dynamic. The dad told her, actually, he's moving out, but don't tell anyone. So there's like this whole other side to her parents' relationship that we never explore.
Pretty sure some of this comes back around in the next episode that you don't remember about. But I would say, as a framing, getting me back into the Cybermen in 2006 and now in 2015, it's just not working for me. I don't understand the gravitas, the intention, the you know... the danger of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
It lacks imperative. It lacks, like, direction. It just... I don't know what the subject is.
Sure. So what are you giving this?
It's a solid, solid 1.9.
All right. Yet again, you are more generous than I am. But that must be because you really want to jerk off Mickey and Ricky.
I would. Both hands.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. Actually, you know what? Twins? I'm on board. People who are not Nick, why are you not following this man on Twitter? Wait, hang on, you are? Yes, 9 out of 10 just said we are. 1 out of 10 is an idiot. That's right, I'm talking to you. Go to Twitter and follow at Nickelele. That's like ukulele, but with Nick.
Yes.
Your life will be improved.
Nickulele.
Well done. It's nicely read.
I know. It's my name with Ellie on the end. Anyway. And conversely, if you're not following at Ponkin, what are you doing with your life?
I don't know.
I'm assuming you don't have Twitter. Go on to Twitter. Log on. Follow Stephen Fry and Ponkin. And then you'll be Twittering them now. Because
it's a soundbite of JD saying how you spell it.
Ponken. Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
And obviously, us at Who Back When.
But, damn right.
Yeah. But, you know, so subscribe on iTunes, comment, fave, blah, 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 all that other marketing nonsense.
Yes.
But it just generally, write some fucking reviews, come engage, chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just going to be mine and Ponkin's opinion forever and ever more. Which is fine.
Not too bad, actually.
That sounds good. That very much plays to my ego. But, we'll definitely be listening to the airwaves and trying to get you guys' opinions.
Kablamo.
And I think that brings us squarely to the end. It's a slightly shorter edition than usual, but you understand this is a two-parter, so tune straight back
it's
in.
Not that much shorter than normal, dude.
Okay, we'll cut a lot of stuff.
Yeah, thanks very much for listening. Oh, I'm just really disillusioned. Really this was a really pants episode.
It really was. It's hard to get blood out of a stone. Having said all of that, I think there's going to be some payoffs. I'm hoping there's going to be payoffs. If there isn't, we're just going to go on some apoplectic rants.
They're leaving Mickey Ricky behind.
Are they? Tune in next week.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for listening. Rock on and cha-chow.
Bye.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of who back when. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus who back when. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?